Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, hi, and thank you for joining me. This is Dr. Fred, and today I've got a news and notes update for you, January 8th, 2020. And I've got a couple of two or three subjects we're going to be discussing. Again, I will have a PDF transcript of this particular episode so that it'll be here on sermon audio for you. And you can just click and read and or download that PDF. And it will have all the links to articles that I'm mentioning as well. So let's get into it. Voter fraud and the Biden presidency. Well, there's obviously bad news with an upcoming Biden presidency, isn't there? I mean, we know that, but is there any good news? Possibly. But before we get into that, let's recap what has transpired in the last 24 to 48 hours. Congress gathered to determine whether or not to accept the Electoral College votes as they are now or as they were then. Several GOP elected officials objected to the validity of the votes. In fact, Democrats have done the same thing before. But of course, the MSM mainstream media is not going to tell us that. Here's a quote. The last three times a Republican has been elected president, Trump in 2016 and George W. Bush in both 2000 and 2004, Democrats in the House have brought objections to the electoral votes in states the GOP nominee won. In early 2005, specifically, Senator Barbara Boxer, Democrat California, along with Representative Stephanie Tubbs, Democrat Ohio, objected to Bush's 2004 electoral votes in Ohio. And I have the link to that particular quote at the bottom of the article in the PDF. And then I also have an image here, which would be good for you to look at, because it's a very simple, concise explanation of the Electoral College, how it works, why it works. And, you know, it can be part of the legitimate process and is part of the checks and balances built into the Constitution to object, to allow lawmakers to object to the Electoral College vote. That's part of a legitimate process. When the Democrats in 2005 did that, the mainstream media had nothing derogatory to say because they knew that it was procedure, proper procedure. However, now that the GOP have done this, Democrats and world leaders are calling it an outrage because it supposedly tears at the fabric of our quote-unquote democracy, which is what they say. Of course, the United States is not a democracy. I don't know how many times we have to say that, but it is a constitutional republic. But don't tell the left, because they will dutifully ignore it. And there is a huge difference between a democracy and a constitutional republic. The main problem with a democracy is that it only requires 51% of the vote to remove all the rights of the other 49%. The Constitution provides protections against that type of tyranny from the majority. And one of those protections is against pure democracy, which again is not the United States. Now, with the Electoral College, it keeps the USA from being bullied by just several large states. In other words, without the Electoral College, the areas with large Democrat or GOP would hold sway over the entire country. That would make it untenable and certainly unfair. The image that I include in the article provides a concise explanation of why the Electoral College is so important and was created by our founders. However, since it's clear, though vehemently denied, that voter fraud was used to gain control of the election and the runoff elections, it doesn't matter at this point, really. In fact, the left has successfully gained control of the voting system. And I do not expect them to give it up unless they are forced to, and that doesn't look like it's going to happen. They've gained control so that the Electoral College really is moot at this point. Now, of course, the Electoral College only comes into play when voting for the President of the United States, not any other position. We can expect a number of things to take place, though, once the Democrat majority of Congress is seated. Who knows what order these things will be accomplished in, but they will most likely be accomplished and will include things like eliminating the filibuster in Congress, eliminating the Electoral College, reworking of the American Care Act, the Affordable Care Act, pardon me, that went into effect under Obama. They will likely raise taxes severely. They will create more laws that will restrict free speech, chipping away at the First Amendment, more gun control laws working toward eliminating private ownership of guns and reparations for blacks, as well as things like they'll push for a universal basic income. Chuck Schumer has already said that he wants to give people $2,000. We'll see. The above are just some of the things that will occur. And again, in what order? I don't know. Who knows? But it will be important for Congress to do whatever they can to severely limit or eliminate God-given rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution in order for the government to gain more control over society and all of its movements. Now, I'm always amazed when I see yard signs for radical leftists who will raise taxes and chip away at people's rights. Apparently, people who put those things on their lawn either agree with that or don't fully understand what those people stand for. They welcome it, seemingly, but they can't. It's so weird because I don't think that they see themselves being negatively affected. It'll be the rich, they think, whose taxes will be raised. It'll be those pesky conservatives whose voices will be reduced or silenced. It's not going to affect them. And yet history, which most people don't know today, is very, very clear in how dictatorships, tyranny, and fascism work. So we've got too many people today actually wanting the government to take care of them. They like it when the government sends them free money. That's what they want. I've talked to business owners in my area who bemoan the fact that they cannot get good, reliable help, even if they offer to pay them $15 or $20 per hour. People are far more interested in staying home and receiving government support. They literally do not want to work. They want to sit home, play their video games, watch television, do whatever they want, but they don't want to work. Now, all of this will eventually segue into a system of socialism where people are simply presented with a paycheck, regardless of what they do or how many hours they work. Now, under socialism, there's really no incentive. It just isn't there. When we went to Europe a number of years ago, my wife and I made it a point to talk to people who were living under socialism then, and that still exists to a degree in Austria and Hungary and other places. They said there was no way they could get ahead. No way at all. The system was designed to work against them, and these were people who actually owned their own businesses, and they wanted to get ahead to provide for their families. They were living in a small apartment. It was better for them not to be married, but just live together, because that way each person could get more money than they could if they were married. Buying a car was almost completely out of the question. They were stuck with having to use public transportation wherever they went. Now, in Europe, the public transportation is much, much better than it is in the United States, but it's still not perfect, and you have to go through their schedule, not your own. So no matter what they did or how hard they worked, it simply couldn't be done. And that system is coming to America, and leftists will applaud it. And these same leftists that are going to applaud it are the elite. These people are the elected officials who will never go hungry, who will never go without a paycheck. You'll notice that when we've had this shutdown and many, many businesses have been forced to close and stay closed, government people didn't lose their paychecks, did they? No, they kept getting them. Didn't matter what branch of the government they were working in. They could be in the health department. They could be police officers. They could be this, that, or the other thing. And especially our elected officials. Those people don't know what it's like to go without a paycheck while the rest of the people are suffering because of it. I think I mentioned previously that Yelp has indicated that 160,000 businesses have been shuttered and will likely not open because of coronavirus and the shutdown. So, you know, it's just incredible what has been happening in society, and so quickly. It's been a year. So what boggles my mind a bit are those who are calling for everyone to simply move ahead with resolve. You know, don't let this keep you down. Just keep going. Let's get another party. Get out and vote. Those kinds of things. The problem, of course, is that due to the amount of voter fraud which occurred, which has been totally cataloged, videotaped, and looked at in various ways, proven, the left has gained a stranglehold over the voting system. There have just been way too many anomalies, way too many questions, too many loopholes, and all need to be addressed. And until they are, we can vote in massive numbers for a particular candidate and still lose because of the amount of voter fraud that occurred and went unchecked. Well, is anything good coming from a Biden presidency? We've outlined a few things that are obviously going to be very bad and worse. But is anything good coming? Well, could be. Under a Biden presidency, it appears that COVID-19 may all but disappear in a matter of a few months following his inauguration. How do we know this? How do we even arrive to that conclusion? Because aren't things getting worse now? Well, we know this because of remarks made by Dr. Fauci, you know, him who should never be questioned, and the CDC back in November, and more recently, the FDA, which has come out in agreement now with Fauci and CDC. And what does it have to do with? Well, it has to do with the PCR tests being used to highlight a positive infection for CV-19. Zero Hedge, and again, that link is in the text, the PDF. Zero Hedge explains it all very well in a very good article that they wrote. Detailed. It all comes down to the fact that it has to do with the cycle thresholds, or CT as abbreviation, used to determine whether or not a sample of CV-19 actually exists in a particular person being tested. Other medical professions argue that the PCR, which is polymerase chain reaction tests, are incapable of detecting actual CV-19 because they've not yet isolated that particular virion, which I've mentioned numerous times before. That aside, let's say it has been isolated. Let's say it is being looked at. Let's say they know what it looks like and how it acts and how to determine it. Well, let's say that happens. Okay, the CT, and the CT again stands for cycle thresholds. The CT currently being used to determine the presence of CV-19 is a rather high number, something like 35 CTs or greater. Now, because of this, the CTs, over 70% of people tested come back as testing positive for CV-19. However, as the article details that I've linked to, if they used a CT count of 30 instead of 35, that's five difference. If they used a CT count of 30, about 70% of those would no longer be considered positive. There's plenty of detail in the article, so I'd recommend highly that you read it thoroughly. The point is that as the CT number is lowered, the number of positive cases also goes lowered. So it makes you think, what number are they using now, and has it just been pulled out of thin air? Is it arbitrary? How'd they get there? But the higher the number, the higher the number of positive cases. So a new study from the Infectious Diseases Society of America found, listen to this, that at 25 cycles of amplification, 70% of PCR test positives are not cases, since the virus cannot be cultured because it's dead. And by 35, CT 35, 90%, 97% of the positives are non-clinical. So PCR is not testing for disease. It's testing for a specific RNA pattern, and this is the key pivot. When you crank it up to 25, 70% of the positive results are not really positives in any clinical sense, since it cannot make you or anyone else sick. Those are facts, apparently. Once again, this is not, and I want to emphasize this for the people way in the back. This is not to say that CB19 is not a real illness. I've always said that it was and is real. However, I've also believed that they've made a mountain out of a molehill in order to accomplish something. What was that? Well, I talked about that in a previous article, and I've linked to that if you go read the text. Have people died from CB19? Sadly, yes, they've died from some viral illness. Over 60,000 people alone died in the state of New York. But let's also remember, a great preponderance of those individuals were elderly and infirm, and they died because they came in contact with younger people infected with CB19 and who were sent to nursing homes for care. The younger patients survived. The elderly, the infirm, did not. Governor Cuomo was not the only governor to do this either. Thousands upon thousands of elderly died needlessly throughout the United States simply because a decision was made by governors to house CV-19 patients in nursing homes, saying that hospitals were overwhelmed, which did not turn out to be the case. But Governor Cuomo has his Grammy, so there's that. But because of the newly released information surrounding the CT threshold of the PCR test, countries like Portugal, for instance, have ruled that the PCR test is not a reliable method. Therefore, any enforced quarantine based on those test results is unlawful. Other countries and states within the United States are following suit. So what's the point of all this that I've just been mentioned? Well, it may very well be that once Biden takes office after a national lockdown, which essentially already began, didn't it? There are states that are still severely locked down, which he as president will have no authority to invoke, just like President Trump had no authority to invoke or to force states to reopen up after they locked down. The CB pandemic will suddenly disappear. Biden will be seen as the hero, and life will regain some sense of normalcy, and people will breathe a massive sigh of relief. But what will have actually happened? Well, the experts will simply have lowered the CT threshold from 35 or 37 plus to somewhere between 15 and 20. And voila! No more CV-19. Woohoo! Celebrate! He saved us! Look, people are still most likely going to continue wearing masks because they are in the habit of doing so and because they believe the fear-mongering created by the MSN. However, because of the reduced CT number, the number of cases will go down drastically. Now, the problem, of course, is that neither the MSM elected officials nor the go-to medical experts will actually emphasize this having been done. Some medical experts who come out and tell us that will probably be censured and banned and, you know, relegated to the garbage dump. They will simply do this quietly, as the FDA has already indicated, by questioning the current method and going along with the CDC and Fauci. They will not necessarily come out and tell us that, hey, all we did was lower the CT for the testing, and don't expect the MSM to tell us either, and they will then crown President Biden the hero in this whole pandemic, saying if only Trump had done what Biden did, the pandemic would have been over a long time ago. That's what they'll tell us. Well, Trump actually did recommend that everything shut down for 15 days to flatten the curve, but he could not force governors to do that. And neither could he force governors to reopen their states either. POTUS does not have that authority. Read the article linked above and see if it makes sense to you. It's all about the numbers game. And the current number of cases is based solely on the CT threshold, not to mention the fact that we're now in flu season that happens every year at this time, starting normally in October. Of course, the medical experts have forewarned us that the flu, which can kill 60 to 80,000 people or more annually here in the United States, is non-existent this year, and everything is labeled coronavirus 19. Now, there are going to be some likely respites here and there as we move forward. But overall, the truth seems to be that the final kingdom, the final Gentile kingdom from Daniel 2, is being built. And not only that, but it is coming out in the open. Now, in the end, Satan's spiritual son, Antichrist, will head up that system and seek to gather all of humanity to his side in a last-ditch effort to thwart God's plan and, get this, to keep Jesus from physically returning to this earth. Kind of like a science fiction movie. There's no truth in what Satan thinks is going to happen or what he's working toward, but God is giving him leave to do his worst. It's not going to happen the way Satan envisions it. And what I find fascinating in the last few chapters of Revelation is that while the saints accompany Jesus back to this planet in his physical return, they do not have one weapon among them. Jesus leads the way and deals with his enemies with a word from his mouth. He does all the fighting. We're along for the ride. Now, in other news, this is interesting. British scientists are developing the world's first smart patch vaccination. Now, we knew this was coming because of things Bill Gates has previously stated. Quote, using polycarbonate or silicon millimeter-long microneedles, the smart patch can penetrate the skin to administer a vaccine. It can be held in place with a strap or tape for up to 24 hours, during which time it simultaneously measures a patient's inflammatory response to the vaccination by monitoring biomarkers in the skin. Once the vaccine has been administered, the device is scanned to produce a data reading that can provide an understanding about the efficacy of the vaccine and the body's response to it. Quote, and I've got a link in here in the article, in the PDF, where you can go to read all of that article. So that's neato, right? Isn't that fascinating? Clearly, all of these new inventions related to the CB19 will ultimately provide the way for the beast or the false prophet to force people to receive the mark, whatever that's ultimately going to be, during the tribulation. And all who do not will be persecuted, most of them to death as enemies of the state. Now, I'm of the opinion that the smart patch vaccine or whatever it will be when the mark is issued will only be part of the mark itself. The actual mark, according to scripture, will have something to do with Antichrist's name. And since we do not know who he is, because he's not here publicly right now, it's pointless to try and do what many others have done by guessing who fits the bill. The article continues by stating, quote, this low-cost vaccine administration device will ensure a safe return to work and management of subsequent COVID-19 outbreaks. Did you get that? Beyond the pandemic, the scope of this work could be expanded to apply to other infectious diseases as the nature of the platform allows for quick adaptation to different infectious diseases, unquote. I find that interesting. So they're planning ahead. They know there are going to be other things coming along, whether they just happen naturally or whether they have to release them, it's going to be here. So we have that to look forward to, I guess, don't we? And the last thing I want to talk about is something I've called the Pence-Ryan emails. Interestingly enough, Julian Assange released emails a while ago between Paul Ryan, ex-Speaker of the House, and Mike Pence and their team. Now, recall that in 2016, Pence teamed with Ryan for the Pence-Ryan ticket for the presidency. So these emails go back to that time. The back and forth is very interesting, and if readers should choose to read it, please note that there is vulgar language in the emails, and the content of the emails themselves are a bit troubling. And I have a link for that also in the PDF. You know, more than ever, I firmly believe that it is time for every authentic Christian to begin every day choosing this day whom we will serve. Not choosing is choosing the default. Let's forge ahead in faith that God still has people who need his salvation, and he wants us to spread the gospel of good news to those folks, even if they're leftists and unwilling to hear the truth. The reality is that we need to step up and seek God until we gain his peace that passes all understanding in these troubling times. Have a great day in the Lord, and I trust you're doing well, and I hope you'll join me again next time as you did this time, and I pray that God will open your eyes so that you can see how blessed you are in him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.